please. Case number 17-1101 et al. New Jersey Board of Public Utilities et al. Petitioners versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Mays for Petitioner Monitoring Analytics LLC. Mr. Hall for Petitioner AMP Inc. Mr. Nathan for Respondent FERC. And Mr. Flynn for Engineer PJM Interconnection LLC.
Mr. Mays.
May it please the court. I'm Jeff Mays, counsel for the Independent Market Monitor for PJM. I will speak to the first issue in this case, the definition of congestion revenue and whether congestion revenue includes balancing congestion revenue. Congestion revenue is created when load pays more for power than generators are paid for power. This chart explains congestion revenue. On the left side in blue, half the load is served by a local generator that costs $10 per megawatt hour. The other half is served by a generator on the right in yellow that costs only $5 per megawatt hour. The cheaper generator can only serve part of load because there is a limiting transmission line connecting the cheaper generator to the load. The load pays $10 for every megawatt hour, even though half the megawatt hour only costs $5. The equation in green shows the difference between load payments and total payments to generation is congestion revenue. The simple math here is all that matters in this case. The math was sound in 1997. It remains sound in 2016. The contested orders offer
Council,
no rationale
let
for changing.
Let me ask you a question at the outset that puzzled me somewhat. If I read the briefs, particularly the government's brief in this case, apparently there is a division of view amongst load-serving entities as to whether this present rule helps or hurts. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
All load-serving entities are on your side?
Load-serving entities are on our side.
I beg your pardon?
Load-serving entities are on our
All
side.
All of them?
Any business that is characterized by being a load-serving entity is on our side. I can't say that none of the financial traders don't have some small-scale operation that
No, I'm not
serve
talking
load.
About financial traders. Okay. I was puzzled at what the government said that the load service entities actually benefited from its rule.
Right. That's false. That's false, and it's right in the math.
I'm not sure I understand that because load-serving entities are the initial recipients or holders of the ARRs.
Correct.
From which the FTRs flow.
Correct.
And so if the change is something that is intended to increase the value of and decrease the underfunding of FTRs, why is that not something beneficial to the load-serving entities?
Well, because there's no such thing as an underfunding problem the way that the commission is describing it. And the reason is in the math. The math shows that load pays $1,000.
But whether there were or not an underfunding problem, if something's bolstering the value of a financial instrument that originates in the hands of the load-serving entities, it's just not clear to me why that would be a detriment to the load-serving entities.
When the market changed, originally all load got was FTRs, and so that was the only product. Load got an FTR, it entitled it to a return of congestion revenue. Then in 2003, the rules changed somewhat, and instead of getting an FTR, load was allocated an ARR. Load could do two things. Load could continue to take the ARR and convert it to an FTR, at least prior to 2016, and receive a return of congestion revenue in the same manner it always had. Its second option was to turn the ARR over to the FTR market and then receive auction revenues that resulted from participants buying FTRs in that market. And then those buyers of the FTRs then received the uncertain congestion revenue. So the problem in the 2016 order is it undermines all of that. In particular, we look at first a load-serving entity that gets an ARR and then converts it to an FTR. Previously, it would get back the a portion of congestion revenue that was paid. Now, in addition to getting back a portion of congestion revenue that it pays, It also has to pay a negative congestion charge, a negative balance and congestion charge, and there's no reason to pay that charge. That doesn't benefit load at all. In the FTR market,
so that's your key fight above all else, is that you don't want the load-serving entities to be liable for the real-time congestion charges.
That's correct.
That is it. That's the economic fight.
That's the economic fight. You know, I wasn't really expecting there to be a link between the other case and this case, but just as Judge Garland said in reference to the other case, if you have a cash register, you can't pay more out of the Senate. That's the fundamental thing going on in this case. The cash register is congestion revenue. The congestion revenue, it's not a flaw in the market that congestion revenue comes about. It's from the normal operation of LNP markets. It's because
Did you deny the proposition that over the last 5 years or so, the amount of money in the pot to pay the FTRs has diminished?
No, the amount is, as a mathematical matter, the math is always right. The math always produces congestion revenue at some level. The level of congestion revenue depends on how much power is obtained from the cheaper generators that are on the other side of constraint, and how much power is obtained from the local generators on your side of the constraint. That's what produces congestion revenue.
I'm a little puzzled. How can there be a disagreement over how much money is in the pot to distribute to the FTR holders?
There should be no disagreement.
But there is.
A lot of confusion has been spread about the nature of congestion revenue and what it is. And
You can finish your sentence. I'm sorry.
Right. One of the confusing arguments is one that the Commission references, which is the idea they're a hedging product. They're not a hedging product. They've been called an offset. And so you could loosely use the word hedge to mean the same thing as offset, to mean that when load pays $1,000, it gets back the congestion revenue, in this case $250. That's an offset to what it pays, $1,000. But it's not a hedge. It's not a risk management product. But there has become some confusion about the nature of congestion revenue and ARRs to associate them with financial derivative risk management type products, and that's not what they are.
And Mr. Mazes, I was under the impression that you were challenging the exclusion of the balancing congestion from the FTRs.
It's the exclusion of balancing congestion from the calculation of total congestion revenue. There are two stages to the market. So there's a day-ahead market and a real-time market. And in the day-ahead market, it determines day-ahead congestion revenue. Then things change. Generator availability changes,
right.
Transmission constraints changes, right. Load levels change, and so you have a balancing market that gets the final answer. The final answer is determined, you know, there's in that balancing market, you have balancing congestion revenue. That revenue can be positive, negative, or it could be no change.
Typically negative, no?
In recent years, it's been negative. In the early years, it was positive. In either case, it's just an adjustment to the total revenue collected.
Now, to the extent that an FTR includes the balancing congestion, it would seem to be a kind of a hedge.
I don't know what risk would be hedged against. I mean, if you mean it is an offset, it's an offset to what load pays in terms of its $1,000 in the locational market.
Well, if I'm a utility and I have fixed contracts based on the day-ahead market, and I'm expecting to receive power at a certain price, and then in the real-time market, there are obstacles to my getting that, and I have to pay more, then that's something that is an extra cost. It's unanticipated. It's not going to be covered by the contracts.
No, that's not really how it works, because the load always pays $1,000, and so that's not changing. Now, if load wants to get a risk management product against congestion pricing, it can go get a financial derivative. And it can do that voluntarily, and there are markets that would allow it to manage those risks. But FTRs don't provide protection against congestion price. If you pay a lot of money to the generator in the blue zone, that's what money that the generator gets. And so there's not going to be any congestion revenue coming back to you from that payment, because there is no money. The only money that can come back to you is when you paid more under a locational marginal price than what it costs to pay the generator in the cheaper zone. And so that money comes back as an offset. The reason it does that, the policy behind it is not hedging. It is to duplicate in the LNP markets the same service that was received in the prior regulatory regime, which was firm transmission service.
Why do you care what the label of hedging or not? Why is that relevant to the lawsuit?
It's only relevant to the confusion. I always ask the question, why is it that there's a disagreement? And it's the confusion that has, I think, been is traceable to the use of this term hedging and misuse of it.
Well, in any event, I'm sort of puzzled. I'll ask counsel for the government why there's this disagreement as to whether or not there's a shortfall in the distribution for FTRs at the end of the process.
Right. There is no shortfall. What they mean, what they will tell you, this is what FERC will look to, is something called an allocation mechanism that is used to determine, because once you have load getting all the congestion revenue, you have to allocate it among various load serving entities. And so there is a process to allocate those rights among different load serving entities. So the target allocation, the term I'm looking for, that is part of the formula that is used to allocate the money to different load. And so the sum of the target allocations can be different from total congestion revenue. It could be higher, lower, or the same. But that's not underfunding. That's just a target that's used to allocate the money.
You think the target is just mistaken?
The target is mistaken, and the target is mistaken because there is a very difficult problem that PJM faces that we've been working on. And that is that in the day-ahead market, to make the market more efficient, you want that target allocation to be close to what goes on in real time. That's a lot of hard work. I mean, that includes getting the weather prediction right, the load prediction, all of that. And so PJM is under a lot of pressure to make its markets more efficient by getting that target allocation closer to real time. But that requires real hard work. One way to avoid that work is to just take negative balancing congestion and assign it to load, and your problem magically disappears. But it doesn't, because what it ends up doing is, I mean, the net result really is that load subsidizes speculative activity in the FTR market.
Yes, tell me, I didn't quite understand that in your brief. Why? It seems to me your basic argument is between the load, as you see it, between the load serving entities and the speculators in the financial market.
That's right.
Why is that? What is your fight with them and why?
Well, what the FTR market does, and I was mentioning before the development of our FTRs, where the way all balancing congestion revenue is allocated and how that moved to the ARR model. And with that, one thing, the load could continue as it always had and have an FTR, or it could go to the auction. And there...
Right. That's ARR gives them the option.
Right, it does. And so the other side of that transaction is someone who says, I'll take the uncertain congestion revenue,
right,
and I'll make a fixed payment in this market for that product, and then that money will flow to the LSEs.
Right.
So fundamentally, that's an exchange of a fixed payment for a speculative payment about what will happen. The speculation isn't bad. It's necessary to make the FTR market work. Speculation is necessary to make any of the derivatives markets work.
I'm with you so far.
What's that?
I'm with you so far, so go ahead.
So that's why it's speculative activity. Now, in doing the allocation mechanism, there's this target allocation, which we've already understood is not about...
That's sort of your assumption. The target allocation is your assumption. Is there assumption in the beginning of how much electricity will flow over what period of time, right?
Right. It's an assumption, and it's pretty much known to be wrong. It's known to consistently not predict the level of capability that will actually be in the system in the real time.
So that's your view. They should just change the target allocations, and then there wouldn't be a shortfall.
Right, we should improve modeling, and I'm, you know, it's a very hard effort. There's always going to be.
But that assumes a certain efficiency of the capability of the transmission lines themselves, doesn't it?
Right, it assumes in day ahead.
And if you raise your target allocation too high, then you may not have the capacity to move electricity on the grid.
That's correct, but the target allocation really doesn't, it's really not part of what's necessary to make the markets work. It's just part of how to allocate the rights amongst load, because it's hard to attribute congestion revenue to any particular actor in a network market model. And so that's really its only role. And while it would be, you know, the reason why it would be better to have that more accurate is more accurate information earlier is better for markets, but you don't actually need it. And so it, what really needs to happen is the congestion revenue has to go back to load, and in the day ahead market, when speculators come in, what their role is to buy an FTR based on what they think total congestion revenue will be. So they are the ones that are supposed to be taking on the risk that there will be differences in the target allocation weights and the risk that whatever the day ahead results will be and whatever the real time results will be, because that's what produces the congestion revenue. And so that's the very risk that they're supposed to be taking on, yet.
Sorry. And you argue that they should retain the balancing congestion as part of FTRs, and I think FERC responds that when allocation of congestion has been part of FTRs, it's just led to load-serving entities indirectly paying in terms of reduced ARR allocations, and they base the new order on trying to respond to that.
Right. That's a very misleading argument. And the reason why is that in order to make target allocations closer to congestion revenue, PJM took a unilateral action, and that unilateral action was to reduce the allocation of ARRs to load. So less of the system that load paid for by paying for transmission charges is now being allocated to load. That artificially boosts the FTR price, but it means load gets less of the system it pays for. It means it gets less total ARR rights.
Does this have anything to do with their decision to reduce the return for LSEs who are operating transmission lines on a legacy basis that aren't really being used?
If I recall, I think that issue was one that PJM proposed as one of its solutions, if I've got you right, that it was one of the solutions it proposed, and that's part of, the other issue that will be addressed by the other
council. But are they connected? Are these issues connected?
There is some connection, but, you know, we have a... You know, there's a whole separate issue with just how the allocation works and how you divide, you know, because one problem in the FTR market that fortunately is not part of this case, and it's confusing, but that is that the allocation metric uses paths, the contract paths to do the allocation, and that really isn't accurate in a network model. It's the source of a lot of mischief. It's something we're working hard to correct, but it is an allocator, and so you have to allocate it some way. That's the way it's done, and we think there are better ways. But we don't really think that that's an issue in this case. That's another problem to fix.
Is it accurate, Mr. Mace, to say that other regional markets, FTR-like instruments, do not include balancing congestion?
Well, I know the ISO New England does it the pre-2016 way. They do it the correct way. They calculate total congestion as day-ahead congestion plus real-time congestion.
I thought that the briefing said that several other regional ISOs don't, and I just wondered if that's the case, how could it be not just and reasonable to calculate FTRs based only on the day-ahead congestion revenues?
The reason it wouldn't be just and reasonable is because the math here, there's no reason after load is paid for power at LMP to impose a charge for negative balancing congestion that basically exceeds the money in the cash register. That can't be just and reasonable anywhere.
They're basically double charging.
It's basically you've paid for power and suddenly this artificial charge. And what is that charge about? I want to go back to the other question. You know, why are they paying this charge? They're paying this charge because there's this FTR market where they exchange that risk of uncertain payout for a fixed payout. And the parties that have bought that uncertain payout now feel that that risk should be subsidized if this arbitrary metric target allocation isn't met. And so they lose the very benefit of the transaction in the FTR market to make that change of uncertain to certain payment is lost, because now there's this unhedgeable,
Right, because didn't you just say earlier that if somebody wanted to hedge against
If you want to hedge it, you have to go to a financial derivatives market, one that wouldn't be regulated by FERC. And so, you can hedge LMP, you just go to a different market.
Council, What are your basic legal arguments?
Well, the basic legal argument...
I understand it's fair to say that you argue that the change of the policy on this by FERC was arbitrary and capricious?
Right. It's arbitrary and capricious, but also there's the additional...
That simply means unreasonable, which coincides with the reasonable statutory definition, isn't it? So
yes.
The only question is whether they're reasonable.
Well, there's
FERC
an additional...
reasonable. And you say they're unreasonable. Why? Because they've changed from an old system without adequate explanation?
No, it's unreasonable because there's no... They have chosen to regulate by LMP markets. LMP markets operate a certain way. They produce congestion revenue. There is a policy that FERC has not changed. In fact, cites in their brief that says that we want to duplicate firm transmission in the LMP market as it existed previously. But the only what they don't apparently appreciate is that the only way to do that is to return balancing congestion to load, and not to do anything, you know, not to do what they've done, which is have this totally additional charge placed on top of LMT. That just makes no sense. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we're here, is that this really just goes to a core issue of how LMP markets should properly work.
I have to say, I'm sorry, you can finish your answer.
Right, so if we mess this up, then nothing but problems are going to build on top of it, because a core mechanic of LMP will be...
Why isn't this just a policy decision?
It's not a... The policy decision was to have LMP markets, which was taken in 1997.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you, Council.
There was a policy decision. FERC does not have to regulate through competition. FERC does not have to approve LMP markets. But in 1997, they did, on the basis of extensive expert testimony that explained all of this and how this math works. And it explained that the purpose of FTRs was to continue to provide firm transmission service to load in the new LMP design. It explained that balance of congestion is an offset to LMP payments, and that all that congestion revenue should be returned to load. And then for 18 years, FERC, the commission implemented that policy. And in 2012, there was a complaint, and that complaint asked that balancing congestion be charged to load, and the FERC said no. Then the complaint was filed again in 2013. FERC said no again with prejudice. Then in 2015, FERC considered all the evidence again and on a hearing confirmed its initial order and said that balancing is not unjust and unreasonable to return balancing
congestion
to load.
But then they changed their mind. Why is it unreasonable? I don't understand.
Because they did not change. The only reason that they give for changing their mind was change in circumstances, and there is
yes.
no change in circumstances. There is no change in, for one thing, in 2012 and 2013 and 2015, you had the thing they call revenue adequacy was there, and they explained in those orders that FDR should be valued by the market. And they were correct, and they haven't explained anything that's changed. Nothing changed, and they were right the first time, and so there's no change. Then the second change...
Mr. Mays, I still don't understand your answer to my very first question, which is why the load-bearing entities object to something when it affects the value of a product that is initially allocated to them. In other words, if the idea is to, you know, to prop up the value of FTRs, the FTRs, you can keep them. You don't have to trade them into the market. If they're going to be artificially given more value because the balancing congestion is peeled away, then that's a benefit that you're going to get, no?
Prior to 2016, that would be right. Prior to 2016, if I converted my ER to an FTR, then I would get my share of congestion revenue. Now, as a result of the contested orders, if I convert my ARR to an FTR, I get a share of congestion revenues, but then a new charge comes along and charges me negative balancing congestion. And that charge appears out of nowhere, and I'm not helped by the increase in
FTR
values.
But you have an increased FTR payment that is boosted by the absence of that congestion balancing, presumably helping you offset the cost of the congestion balancing that's no longer being paid through the FTR mechanism.
Now, the boost in the the increase in SDR value doesn't help. And part of it is that, you know, PJM continues to underallocate ARR, so it's a price quantity.
Wait a minute. Why doesn't the increase in the value of the FTR help you? I don't understand that.
It doesn't help because there's another charge that's placed on top of LMP, and that all you would expect to get back.
But wait a minute. If the what my colleague was pointing out, if the FTR, which you could hold, increases in value because of what FERC's done.
I'm sorry. One thing is that the increase in value does not occur to the entitlement to congestion revenue. There's no increase there, no change. So if I take an ARR, convert it to an FDR, I get no money back because of the change in value. There's no change in value. All I get is the allocation of the congestion revenue. That's all I get. I get nothing. The only change in value that occurs is in the FDR market, and that is, you know, those LSEs that don't just convert to the FDR, but go to the market and say, we'll get the auction
using
revenues.
Using their option advantage under the AIR.
Right. Well, they get ARRs.
Yeah.
And so and the so they're not getting FDR revenues anymore.
No. If you get an AIR, you have an option, don't you?
No. All you get is the auction revenues now.
I thought I understood you had a choice of taking, once you had an AIR, you had a choice of taking an FDR or going to the auction revenue, one or the other.
Right. You get one or the other.
Well, then you could take the FDR.
Right. If you take the FDR, there's no change in its value.
Yes, I understand that. Now,
except to the extent that its value is, or its payment is increased because the balancing congestion has been, obligation to deal with the balancing congestion has been taken out of it.
If you take the FDR, there's no change in payment. There's no. If I just convert my AR to an FTR, there's no change.
No change from what to what?
There's no increase in payment because FTRs are valued more in the FTR market. Think of the FTR market as a secondary market.
So an FTR is an obligation and a benefit. So you have an FDR, and if congestion revenue is positive, you're going to get a share of that, right?
That's right.
Then typically, as I understand from the examples in the briefing, the same-day market also has some congestion balancing, typically in recent years negative, right? And that also becomes part of what the FTR takes on board. And so they're going to get less of the positive congestion revenue because some of it they have an obligation vis-a-vis the congestion balancing, right?
Right, and load isn't entitled to more than the congestion revenue it pays. So that's right.
I mean, right, nobody
just
is.
Look at this FTRs, nobody is, because it would make no sense for load to get paid more than congestion revenue either.
Right.
And so on that side of the equation, it's just congestion revenue, and I don't think it's really an obligation or a benefit. It's just an offset. It's just money that's owed back to load. And they should not pay this crazy charge that has nothing to do with returning congestion revenue to load.
Maybe the confusion in part is there so presumably this would only apply to not yet issued FTRs? It's not going to change. Like, is there a retroactivity problem here? Is that part of what?
I don't think we're concerned about just a fundamental change to LMP, and right now, this rule is in effect. Right now, more money is being diverted away from load that should get congestion revenue back into other parties. That's, you know, it's
were you a moment ago suggesting that the instrument is worth less or could be worth less to you if you got it directly, the LRM? Do I have it, the initials correctly? The LRP?
LMP.
LMP.
What?
Sorry. The LMP could be worth more in the auction market than it is if you receive it from PNJ?
In the market, if you take your ARR and you say, I'll take revenues, and
the ARR is the option,
right,
allowing you to keep the LMP or God damn it, I can't remember. FTR. Will you stop talking about LMP? You're getting... The FTR, you keep the FTR or sell it.
Right. Well,
were you suggesting
yes.
that if you just hold it, it would not increase in value in accordance with the RN analysis, but it could increase in value in the auction market. Is that your point?
Right. It could raise auction revenues if the FTR gets more money, but you're still at a disadvantage. You know, what should happen is if I sell my ARR to the FTR holder, I should exchange the rights that I would have had from the FPR. But instead, unlike the buyer of the FTR, you know, I get the auction revenues, but I also pay.
You also have to pay
the balancing negative redemption charge.
Balancing.
The FTR holder doesn't have to pay that.
But presumably, you would get a higher price for that FTR under the new regime because the market knows that the FTR holder doesn't have to pay the balancing congestion. And so the question is, if the market's working properly, why isn't that the case? And given that you're the original holders of the ARR with the option to keep or sell the FTR and that the market should reflect the increased price of the FTR once the balancing congestion is taken out of it, why isn't it a wash for you?
It's not a wash because a lot of load isn't participating in that auction, so it doesn't get that benefit.
Because they're keeping the ARR?
Because they convert their ARR directly to an FTR and they don't get any auction revenue. And so
well, that's their choice.
Yeah.
That's their choice, what's so puzzling to us.
That's what's puzzling to us. That's
right.
Their choice. If the whole point of this reform is to boost the market price of FTR, then and the market is doing better than the non-market holder of FTR or casher in of FTR, then why wouldn't that make you want to move into the market?
Well, the boost in the price of FTRs does flow some additional money back to those load serving entities that are allocated in ARR. As a result of these rules, you know, they've been allocated less.
Is that your basic objection? The allocation of AARs has changed to disadvantage certain legacy transmission lines?
No, that's really a side objection. The real objection is the mechanics of LMP, and that artificially boosting the value of FTRs, it doesn't make sense. It's much better to let the market do the valuation of FTRs, because that's what the market's there for. This is an artificial intervention, part of it restricting supply, part of it by taking part of congestion revenue, the part that's negative, and taking it out of the calculation and allocating more congestion revenue than actually exists. And that all comes at the expense of load. And load is worse off when that happens, even if there is some increase in the auction revenues in the auction. And
further questions? Okay, well,
I just have one other question, and that's about these allocation issues. The September 15th order mentions that the reforms that PJM proposed to address revenue adequacy had raised allocation issues. So that's one of you're saying that's a side
issue?
Right.
One of the changed circumstances that the commission looked at was PJM's unilateral decision and a misguided decision to begin restricting ARRs that it allocated, which harms load because they get less of the system that they're entitled to. And instead, it does have this boosting effect of the that we discussed. But that was a mistake, and it was unilateral. And FERC, the PJM, when it made its filing, it said the markets have become unjust and unreasonable because we did this, and we agree with PJM. The unilateral action that PJM took did have an unjust and unreasonable result. And so we think the reasonable response of FERC to that might have been to order PJM not to do that. That policy that PJM admitted was unjust and unreasonable, that would have been rational. Instead, they looked entirely away from the issues that this pleading concerned, which were all about how to fix the allocation problem and not to change the fundamental mechanic of LMP that determines balancing congestion revenue, and instead ordered that this equation be changed. And said that we're going to add this new charge for negative balancing congestion on top of what load pays for LMP.
One thing that's a little unclear to me is that the order says that FTR values are based solely on congestion revenues in the day-ahead market, but that FTRs are funded based on revenues from both the day-ahead and real-time market. And what's not clear to me is why isn't the fix for that to let the market set FTR values to account for both markets rather than to take out of FTR funding the balancing and from the same-day market, real-time market?
Well, to the extent the order said that, it wasn't describing the actual way it works. They weren't describing LMP and congestion revenue, which is part of this two-stage market design. There was a decision in 2003 that made some description like that that I saw quoted in the briefs, but that was describing the model that we think is the right model. So it was a mistaken description. And the fact that they chose this arbitrary allocator to be the day-ahead-based target allocation just doesn't change the fact that we're only talking about an allocation mechanism. And we're not talking about a mechanism that should determine the size of congestion revenue, which is the only money that should fund FTR payoffs.
All right, are there further questions? Okay, thank you. Mr. Hall, you have 7 minutes.
May it please the court, my name is Garrett Hall. I represent American Municipal Power, Inc., and I'm going to address the next two issues, thankfully the only two remaining issues. These issues relate to what PJM had actually proposed in its initial filing that underlies the two decisions that are at issue in this case. In contrast, what Mr. Mays was addressing was the remedy that the commission had adopted and in the process or at the same time rejected the two proposals that PJM had put forth and that I'm going to discuss. So the first of these is the portfolio netting issue, and the portfolio netting issue has to do with positive FTRs and negative FTRs. Positive FTRs correlate to an actual flow of energy on the transmission system and over a congested path. And in contrast, the negative FTRs are essentially a speculative interest instrument that is held typically by financial participants in the market. It has a purpose. It does facilitate some more FTR allocations.
And make clear what the negative FTR does.
So the negative FTR, I guess, is best to compare it to the positive FTR. In the case of the positive FTR,
we know the positive FTR.
Okay, so the holder is receiving in that case a payment,
right.
And when there's activity on that path, and so in the case of the negative FTR, that holder of that negative FTR is paying into the pool of funds that are used to fund the FTRs.
That's the only thing I understand about it, because in a locational marginal price market, the way that I understand from the papers in this case, there is congestion revenue. It's a positive. So I don't
right.
see where there's a negative FTR. If the whole point of the FTR as an instrument is because generators offer power into a market at varying prices, and the market clearing price is going to be higher than the price at which certain generators are willing to deliver power, then there's going to be this revenue where that's the difference between the price of some offers and the market clearing price.
Am I correct in the negative is a situation where the price at the sink is lower than it is at the source? Is that the point?
That's a true statement, but I don't think that was Judge Pollard's point. Hers, I think, is more fundamental, and that is she wants to know what is the origin of this animal. And so by way of elaborating, everything that you said, Judge Pillard, is correct. That is how the FTR comes to be. But layered on top of that allocation of FTRs and that market for FTRs, that volume of FTRs, is an additional volume of positive FTRs that are facilitated by the auctioning off of negative FTRs. So this is basically incremental to what the real capability of the transmission system is, and it's essentially an artificial FTR in a sense. It has negative value in relation to the positive FTR that it corresponds to.
And it's not a creature of congestion balancing.
I didn't hear your question.
I said it's not a creature of congestion balancing?
In my view, I don't think that it's directly related to congestion balancing in the sense that the positive FTRs that are allocated up to a level that reflects the actual capability of the transmission system. It's something beyond that. But it does exist, and so probably debating its origin isn't maybe the best use of the next couple minutes. But what I would like to explain a little bit is the nature of the problem with the netting of these two instruments against one another. And the problem revolves around which parties hold them and the effect of the netting on the different parties and how the parties are holding those FTRs. If the parties happen to be holding positive FTRs in a portfolio that includes negative FTRs and they're allowed to net against them, they can avoid some of the payment obligations that would normally be corresponding with the negative FTRs, or in the reverse scenario, they can be avoiding the effect of an underfunding, a so-called underfunding of FTRs, by essentially getting more value for the positive FTRs that they have in their portfolio. And this situation is usually associated with a financial market participant. A load-serving entity generally doesn't hold what the commission in its orders has described as a speculative, maybe with a positive value, speculative negative FTR. So the load-serving entities, the entities that have an obligation to serve customers, and therefore the customers are the ones who are disadvantaged by this treatment.
So if you were to eliminate the, under the order, the netting, you would make what? You would make speculation much less desirable. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. There was some argument in that vein, and really sort of getting to the crux of the legal issue here, which is whether FERC properly explained or fully explained, reasonably explained the decision that it made. And our view is that it did not. FERC recognized the problem. There's basically no factual dispute here in terms of what the problem is, I don't think.
I'm not sure I understand what the problem is.
Well, the problem
is, I don't understand why netting is not sort of an obvious way of handling the market.
Well, there's some form of netting no matter what, and that happens at the end of the day. It's really a question of the timing of the netting. Is the netting done within the portfolio, or is it simply a function of the settlement process? And so if these two instruments had exactly the same value, the timing wouldn't matter. Here, they do have different value because of this payout ratio. And so if you have a portfolio and you have one instrument that has an obligation to pay and another that has a right to receive revenue, the right to receive revenue is prorated based on the level of funding that's available. The obligation to pay shouldn't be because there's no payment, so why should it be getting the benefit of a shortfall?
Oh, I see. You want the negative characters to pay through the nose. They're not supposed to get any benefit from purchasing positive FTRs.
Not exactly, Your Honor.
Pretty close.
The problem that we see is the sort of
You really want to eliminate the value of negative.
Well, the value, taking the FERC's view, is that the value will be properly set in the auction, presumably either way. And that's one of our problems with the explanation for the decision, is that FERC recognized the issue, if you don't want to call it a problem, the scenario where the load-serving entities are receiving for their positive FTRs an amount that's less than the portfolio holder does. Under
so the result of your position would be the elimination of negative STRs.
We're not taking that position. There
no,
were
but
parties that
economically
that.
Would that happen?
Would that happen?
Yeah. Is that your desirable objective?
It isn't a desirable objective of my clients, and I don't think that would necessarily happen. It's possible that those negative FTRs would be receive less value in the auction process, but I don't think that they would go.
I see.
Further questions? All right. I'm sorry, Eric. All right, we'll hear now from FERC.
Good morning. Anand Viswanathan on behalf of the Commission. So if I can just briefly touch on a couple of the concepts that came up with respect to this netting rule, and then I'll turn back to the many questions on the issue of balancing congestion. George Pillard, you asked the question about the point of the negative financial transmission rights, also known as counterflow rights. The point of these rights, I think, it's a little confusing to refer to them as positive and negative. I mean, the way to think about that is that they're opposite payment streams. If you recall, you probably don't recall this from our brief, but the way in which PJM limits the number of the rights that are available is based on the physical capability of the various transmission lines. So if you can imagine a very simple example where you have a line that from point A to point B that supports 100 megawatts of financial transmission rights, that is the maximum number of rights that that line can hold. The only way to get more, so for example, if there's demand of, let's say, 125 megawatts, the only way to support that additional 25 megawatts of demand for positive or prevailing flow of financial transmission rights is if someone else comes in and says, I will buy the counterflow or negative value right for that 25 megawatts, because the net there is zero. Because remember, the way positive value rights work is...
Now tell me why somebody would buy the negative if the likelihood of transmission is only 100.
Well, because I think that if you're acquiring the negative right, if you think about it in terms of the auction, you are paying the auction price. Excuse me, you are receiving the auction price, and you are paying the value of the expected value of congestion. So if you're a party interested in buying counterflow or negative value rights, what that means is you're making a calculation or a bet that you think that what you're going to receive in terms of the auction price is going to benefit you more than what you have to pay. Okay? So remember, if you're acquiring a positive financial transmission right, you are paying the auction price. And then in return, PJM is going to pay you the value of congestion in the day-ahead market.
Well, I had that question earlier, whether the negative FTR was essentially a situation where the price at the sink was less than the price at the source. Is that what happens?
That's exactly right.
That's what I thought.
And so the only way that PJM is going to... And part of the reason they have this physical limit is we are not going to pay positive value rights more than the congestion that we expect to receive. But so if they're, in my example of the 25 megawatts of additional positive rights, in that scenario, there's no additional funding that PJM has to come up with in terms of congestion revenue. So whatever PJM owes to that additional 25 megawatts of positive rights is being covered and paid by the negative right holders who are paying the 25 who are acquiring the 25 megawatts of negative or counterflow rights. That's the point of it. It essentially...
But I think, I mean, maybe Judge Silverman's content with the answer to his question, but why would anybody buy that? I mean, and why is it even something that FERC can regulate if it doesn't correspond to any actual physical value?
Well, I think the point that, I mean, first of all, it's not as if there are certain market participants who acquire certain kinds of rights and others that only acquire. So it's not as if financial speculators are the only ones acquiring counterflow rights. We know from our record that load-serving entities do, in fact, acquire counterflow rights. They do it to sort of create different sort of hedges within their portfolios. As I mentioned before, this doesn't, the counterflow rights don't affect the funding levels. This is something that I think all market all parties in this proceeding have agreed at some point before the commission that negative value counterflow rights are actually beneficial to the market because, as I mentioned before, they enable additional demand for positive value prevailing flow rights to be supported. It allows for a more robust trading marketplace.
Each negative FTR allows the creation of a positive.
Exactly. The only way you can get negative rights is if the capability on that particular financial transmission right pathway is full. So that's why I used the example of the 100 megawatt pathway, because it allows you more than that. I'll turn quickly to the issue of, there's been quite a few questions on this issue of what the benefit or harm is to load serving entities from the real-time costs that have been referred to as balancing congestion. The point of PJM.
What do you do with his basis argument that the entire premise of FERC's opinion is wrong? There is no diminution in the value of the FTRs at the end of the process. So there's plenty of money to pay them off.
Well, I think that's based on some sort of theoretical idea that there's no such thing as underfunding.
Yes.
I mean, we know for a fact that that's not true. That's not how the market operator has ever viewed this marketplace. They come up with a report on a regular basis that shows how much revenue has been collected from congestion-related price differences in the day-ahead market. We know for a fact that...
I thought I understood him to say it had to do with the target allocation.
Yeah, and the way that PJM defines target allocation is by reference to day-ahead energy market prices.
That's really the question. So, and this is in your opinion, FTR values are determined solely based on congestion price differences in the day-ahead market. Why? I mean, if we have these two kinds of congestion that have to be dealt with, and what we're looking for is some kind of, you know, instrument to smooth the bumps for load, it would seem to be that the real-time market is at least as important to include in those instruments, and it just seems artificial that FTR values would be determined based on only the day-ahead market.
Well, I think part of the problem there is that the way these products have been defined from the outset, which is not before this court, this is a product that's existed in PJM for almost 20 years.
And it has included congestion balancing.
Well,
I mean, we are, in fact, in the course of a redefinition of this product, no?
Well, I mean, I think what PJM tried to argue here is that there is a difference, an inconsistency between how the products are valued or priced versus how they are settled or paid out. And what that means is that the way the product is valued or priced is based on the market's expectation before the auction
by
of
whom?
What the...
I thought the market was supposed to price them.
The market is pricing them with respect to the auction. That is that the market is making an expectation of what the congestion-related price differences will be in the day-ahead market. As a result of the issue of real-time costs or balancing congestion, it's not just the way these rights are paid out is not just based on day-ahead energy market price differences, which is what this product was created. We have commission precedent on that. PJM has said that in the record, that the point of this product was to offer a hedge against congestion-related prices in the day-ahead market. But as a result of the consistent underfunding, the underfunding being the real-time, the largest contributor of underfunding, I think, in our record, is that those real-time costs are the biggest source of that.
What's your best cite for that, that the largest source of underfunding
sure.
in the market is?
So there's a number of sites in the record. I can give you the commission order sites first, and then we can go to the record as well. In the orders, JA 472, paragraph 96, as well as JA 887, paragraph 75. And what the commission was relying upon there was there's a report by, there's an analysis that PJM did in one of its filings in this record.
So you say there in paragraph 96 that the inclusion of balancing congestion in the FTR settlement process has been a leading cause of FTR
yes.
revenue inadequacy. And do you have any data or
Absolutely.
Studies to support that?
Absolutely. So if you turn to, there's a couple different places. There is JA 839 to 840. And this is a filing by PJM. And what it essentially, there's a chart on, I think it's, yeah, so the chart is on page JA 840. What it's depicting there is levels of funding for financial transmission rights when those real-time costs are taken out of the funding for financial transmission rights versus when they're kept in. So the top graph there shows that we're mostly at 100% when those real-time costs are not taken out of funding for financial transmission rights. I'll just point out that there hasn't really been a dispute in the record that those real-time costs, balancing congestion, is a large source of underfunding of financial transmission rights. I think they dispute the concept of whether underfunding exists in the first place.
Right, and I'm sort of mystified by that because my understanding of how a market is supposed to work is that you wouldn't keep period after period expecting to get funded at a level that corresponds to only one yeah. element of yeah. the risk that your instrument is actually representing.
Right.
And I just don't understand that.
Right.
Why these would be valued consistently based on the day-ahead market when, in fact, they end up being paid based on the day-ahead in the real-time market. I don't understand that.
Sure, and I think that is the central problem that PJM was trying to deal with, because as a result of those real-time costs being taken out of the value.
No. What my colleague is asking is a question that puzzles me, too. Why the devil doesn't the auction price reflect the fact that the real-time was balanced at the end? I mean, if you're buying the FTR in the market, you have to think about, well, gee, what happens if a tree falls? And now we can calculate the risk of that, and therefore that should be reflected in the price. So I think both of us are puzzled as why doesn't the price at the auction reflect the risk of daily balancing or real-time balancing?
Well, so I want to be clear about that. It absolutely does affect the price.
Am I asking the same question you are, Council?
Yes.
It absolutely does. The value at auction is affected by those real-time costs in the sense that the market has an expectation of underfunding, and that's depressing the price at the auction. And I think this gets.
But that's assuming the conclusion. Why does the market assume underfunding? Why doesn't the market assume if we pay the price it'll be adequate funding? I don't get it.
Well, I think
what's wrong with the market? That's what I don't get.
Well, I think that the market is assuming underfunding because the last few years have shown that there is underfunding in this.
So the underfunding is a representation of the risk of what's happening in the real-time market.
That's exactly right. And I think that this.
So it's a proxy for that. So that is the way in which the market is doing exactly what Judge Silverman is asking.
Yes, that's exactly right. And I think that this goes to the question.
But why? Why would the market underfund? Why wouldn't the market fund them? Which is so puzzling to me.
Well, this is a consequence of the way that the rules existed in PJM for how these products were settled. And I think that's the problem that PJM was trying to get.
Maybe the intervener can answer that question.
Let me try to get to the question that's been asked that is related to this about benefit or harm to the load-serving entities from this issue of the real-time costs.
Right.
And I think I started mentioning this before. The central problem here that PJM was trying to address was funding levels for financial transmission rights. As a result of these real-time costs, as a result of this underfunding of financial transmission rights, there's really three ways in which load-serving entities are harmed. They're harmed because they get less congestion revenue, they're harmed because they get less auction revenue, and they're harmed because there are fewer auction revenue rights available. Let me briefly explain that. As you mentioned before, I think, Judge Silverman, You're correct that load-serving entities absolutely have a choice between whether they keep the auction revenue that comes from auction revenue rights or whether they convert it to get congestion revenue from financial transmission rights, and that happens all the time. We know for a fact that load-serving entities absolutely do that. They absolutely take advantage of holding financial transmission rights. The approach that PJM had taken in the prior to the orders on review to address the funding issue and was motivated because there was not a stakeholder consensus on a broader set of reforms was, among other things, to cut the allocation of certain types of auction rights. What that meant, as we explained in our brief, is that fewer, as they're called, stage 1B auction rights are available. So if you're a load-serving entity that would normally get stage 1B rights, there's a pretty good chance you're not getting that revenue. So there's, as I mentioned, those are the three ways in which load-serving entities are harmed by the funding issues in PJM.
Let me get at this a different way.
Sure.
Is there a function of the market, the FTR market, whether when it includes balancing congestion or as now excluding balancing congestion, that is supposed to trigger investment in transmission or transmission reliability? And is part of the desire to separate the two separate kinds of congestion related to that?
I think that I'm not sure how much the financial transmission right market is intended to spur investments in reliability. I mean, I think the way that sort of gets looped into this is the issue of the highest priority auction rights, which are called stage 1A auction rights, because as you may recall from the record and the briefs, those are the only auction rights that must be allocated. And so if there's not enough, if system conditions don't support all the requested stage 1A rights, then PJM has to sort of rerun their model of how the transmission system functions to make sure they can accommodate them.
Or there are fewer stage 1A ARs, right? I mean, that's the whole thing about updating the basis for calculating those rights. No?
Are you referring to the proposal, the 1.5% demand proposal?
Well, no, the alternative that they adopted about updating them.
So I think that the concern, and I think a lot of this is motivated by the sort of cost shifts that had happened between various auction right holders, because the stage 1A folks are going to get their auction rights no matter what. PJM needs to, under its rules, rerun its system to accommodate all those. That can crowd out the other folks, the stage 1B and stage 2 auction right holders. And so part of what was motivating PJM here was to preserve the value of those products as a hedge against congestion, because by addressing the largest source of underfunding of those rights, it strengthens the market for that product. It has an effect on auction revenues. And as I think we've mentioned this in our briefs, and the commission's orders has mentioned this as well, that load-serving entities in particular benefit from a more robust market for financial transmission rights and auction revenues.
Why is it that no load service entities are on your side?
I don't think that's true. I believe that there's at least one load-serving entity that's part of the interveners group, PSE&G.
Oh, I see.
So I don't think it's fair to say that all load-serving entities necessarily agree with the petitioners on this. Again, I'll emphasize that I think the commission here was trying to make sure that this product was working the way it was designed, and that's to provide priority to load-serving entities. I don't think anyone disputes the idea that load-serving entities should be the beneficiary of congestion revenue to hedge against congestion-related costs, but the way that PJM designed that market to work in the first place was that the way they get congestion revenue is through those products. And so these orders are intended to preserve the value of those products as they were intended.
One final question.
Sure.
What is your response to their basic argument that there is no underfunding? That's an illusion.
I don't think there's support for that at all. I mean, I think that the commission accepted PJM's explanation here that there is such a thing as underfunding, And the way PJM has always defined the funding issue is by reference to day-ahead energy market prices. And so if...
Well, I understood their argument is if the target allocation is proper, there's no underfunding. Isn't that what I heard them argue this morning?
So I think the way I understood it from their briefs was that there's...
I didn't understand it from the briefs. I understood it from this morning.
So the way it seemed to be expressed in the briefs was this idea that financial transmission right holders are not entitled to full funding of those rights. And by full funding, I mean the target allocation being the difference in day-ahead energy market prices due to congestion times whatever, however many rights they hold. The problem with that is that even if the tariff doesn't require 100% funding of those rights, that's a goal that PJM has set out to accomplish. What it was trying to do here was make sure that the product was working as intended, and excluding the largest source of underfunding. I think this idea of underfunding being a logical impossibility, or there's no such thing, or the numbers are always right, is just, I mean, that's not how the market operator has defined this product and how it works.
So that it seems like they've defined the product in two conflicting ways. They've defined the product as valued based on the day-ahead market and as funded based on the two markets together. And I mean, petitioners say that making load bear the costs of balancing congestion is just against the whole premise of the day-ahead market. If you're load and you have to provide for customers, you want to lock in a price 24 hours in advance. And if you have to pay then over and above that for the cost of real-time balancing, then you've basically made the day-ahead price rise after the fact. Why is that a way to run a market when the whole original purpose, I thought, of these FTRs was to protect the predictability for load?
So, first of all, you are right that there is this inconsistency between the valuation versus the funding or settlement. I think that's the problem PJM was trying to address in the first place.
And I think one of the questions is, whose problem is that?
Right. So the problem here is that you have to look at not just who is paying those real-time costs, but what the purpose of moving those costs out of the financial transmission right equation is. And I think what PJM was trying to do here was make sure that there is as much funding as possible for financial transmission rights. The reason for pulling out those costs, I mean, I've already mentioned that they were the largest source of underfunding for financial transmission rights. The commission pointed out that there was no, you couldn't trace back the, because there's many causes of those real-time costs. It can't be traced back to any particular market segment or cause. It's basically any time conditions in the day-ahead market are different from the real-time market, and that can happen from a variety of circumstances.
Excuse me for interrupting. Is this really the key of the whole thing? That you, FERC and PMG, have decided that this cost, real-time cost, which is not attributable to anybody, is under your normal rules stuck with the transmission owners.
I think that's exactly right. And I think you're getting to the issue of cost causation, which is where I was going. The records show that there's not any specific cause or market segment that causes these costs. There's not any specific segment of the market that's the sole beneficiary. The record reflects that these costs have system-wide benefits. That's not something anyone has disputed. So under longstanding commission policy, the commission applied those costs broadly to all customers on a pro rata basis. That's something this court has affirmed the commission doing in the past.
It's odd to say they have system-wide benefits. And this is what I had the question about. Are these markets intended to signal or trigger any kind of ameliorative investment? I mean, one would think that that's the whole point of having a market, and that where real-time costs are high, that there would be an opportunity for somebody to bring those down and benefit from bringing those down. But that's not what any of these reforms are going for.
I think the problem is that the real-time costs, there's the really sort of the undercurrent that differentiates the day-ahead costs that can be reflected in the market versus the real-time costs is that one set of costs is predictable, and the other set of costs is not predictable.
One set of costs is not a problem. It's a revenue that the system skims off of ratepayers, and then everybody, you know, is popular because everybody wants a piece of it. I mean, that's not a problem. The problem is in the real-time market, where there are actual in-the-world impediments to the delivery of power at the negotiated price, and everyone's tearing their hair out, and no one wants to take responsibility. And so you've taken the gravy train and said, well, let's just have the FTRs deal with that. And the real difficulty, we'll say, well, we'll just, you know, reassign that to load, because end of the day, we assign everything to load. And I just don't see the logic. It's sort of apples and oranges of trying to, you know, make the FTR market more attractive, but just because something else that PJM did to try to do that made a mess. I mean, that doesn't seem like the kind of change circumstances that an agency usually relies on.
Well, I think
they made a mess doing it in a different way. They'll keep making a mess, so let's let them do this so that they stop making those other messes.
Well, so I think that the mess has existed for quite some time, and I think that, as I mentioned before, it is PJM's goal to try to fund these rights as best as it can. And so I think from PJM, I mean, I'll let PJM's counsel speak for PJM, but from what I could take from the record, PJM didn't view it as an option to throw up its hands and say, well, there's nothing we can do about these real-time costs. I think that what they decided was that, as you put it, nobody can take responsibility for those real-time costs. The way that typically plays out in other commission contexts is if you can't assign a cause or beneficiary, you can spread it to the market broadly. And by ensuring that the product itself, and by the way, I don't think, well, the way that the commission has typically defined this product in its orders is that it is by reference to day-ahead market prices. So if you keep the settlement of the product consistent with the way it's valued in the day-ahead energy market, that's going to strengthen the product because there's greater funding levels, and that's going to help the entire market in terms of more congestion revenue, greater auction prices, and that will only benefit everyone who participates in this market, first and foremost, load serving energy.
All right, you're long over. Let's hear what PJ says on this.
Thank you very much.
Paul Flynn for PJM. Let's start with balance of congestion.
You can raise that higher.
Thank you. Let's start with balance of congestion. This is essentially a cost allocation issue. You have a set of costs in the real-time market. There is a mismatch between compensation in the real-time market, which is what FERC found in paragraph 79 of the rehearing order, that is actually not necessarily related to generation and load. They said, this is what we've called balancing congestion is not necessarily congestion at all. And FERC said that in paragraph 79 of the rehearing order. And in the initial order, I'd refer you to paragraphs 83 through 85, where they summarize the PJM position that lays that out. Okay? So this was a cost allocation question, and the issue is, was it reasonable for FERC to take these real-time market costs and say it's not appropriate to put those entirely on FTR holders, and instead we're going to spread them more broadly? And that
instead what?
Spread them more broadly, which is what you do when you spread.
Why isn't the FTR market a very broad spreading? In fact, it's a market. It would be broader than allocating them to load.
The FTR holders is not congruent with all load, okay? Because again, many load serving entities are allocated these auction revenue rights in recognition of their payment for the transmission system, and they simply keep them. And so what they get as a result of being allocated those rights is when we auction off all the financial transmission rights that the system can tolerate, in this market that you've been referring to.
What percentage of the instruments are held by the load service entities instead of put up for auction?
It is a vast majority. I don't have a specific percentage for you, but the vast majority of load serving entities do
hold the
choose
LTRs.
To hold, because the reason they have that, the reason we created that, is to provide them a more steady revenue stream. Because again, what they're getting is, instead of the daily gyrations of congestion as it changes from hour to hour, what they're getting is someone else is assessing, oh, here's what I think those gyrations will be, and I am willing to pay this amount of money for a financial transmission right in the auction, and that steady stream of money goes to the load serving entities. We created it so that they could have that certainty, and they like that certainty, and they take advantage of it, most of them. But you were absolutely right in your earlier comments that load serving entities always have the right to simply take the auction revenue right, which is megawatts between a source and a sink, and turn it into a financial transmission right and go ahead and ride the congestion as it changes through the day. So FERC, in allocating this imbalance in compensation in the real-time market, as we read it, they advanced three reasonable grounds for doing that. Number one, this gets to your point about day ahead and basing this on the day ahead. It has long been the case that financial transmission rights in PJM, since they were first created, were based on real-time market prices. Why is that? Real-time market prices reflect everything that a seller can think of that may affect activity the following day. Okay? So by definition, what happens in real time is something they couldn't expect. Now, people could be sophisticated, maybe you could say, well, tack on a standard deviation or two,
excuse me,
just to account for that.
Is it fair to say that essentially the contested issue in this case is whether the real-time congestion costs should be taken out of the market, the open law market, and put to the load-serving entities? Now, that could have an economic impact several different ways to load-serving entities, but that's essentially what's happened.
Yes, on the balancing congestion issue, the question is a cost allocation question of, should we take these dollars that we've referred to as balancing congestion, the real-time market, which is compensation that
right.
we're short, and instead of the current rule of saying all the FTR holders pay that, instead spread it over a much larger denominator of all load, because again, what gives rise to this? It is the actions that PJM has to take in real time to keep the system operating, and it's also where there frankly is a mismatch in compensation in the real-time market. And pinning all of that, FERC was saying that, pinning all of that on the FTR rights holders seems excessive. They're not the sole beneficiary, is the language they use.
Basic question. You
yes.
said the broader, spreading it more broadly across load.
Mm-hmm.
So load all have ARR, and therefore the rights to FTR.
Yes.
And some more actors in the market, in the
mm-hmm.
FTR market, also
yes.
have FTR. So it seems to
yes.
me, if you want to spread those costs broadly, you would spread them through the FTR market, because that's all of load and then the investors, right?
Well,
if you're talking about spreading.
Except what you're doing is indirect, okay? Because it wouldn't be, right now, it's only going to the FTR holders. Now, to answer your earlier question, it comes back indirectly to harm the auction revenue rights holders, because, as you were surmising,
The price is lower.
Yes, I'm going to put in what FERC referred to as an imprecise risk premium into my FTR auction bid. FERC found that to be economically inefficient. That's at paragraph 79 and paragraph 80. And so, yes, you could redesign the entire system and say, let's have a system in which we want people to assess that unknowable risk. We've put everything we know in the day ahead, and now we've got, by definition, the unknowns in the real time. Let's force those unknowns. Let's keep those unknowns in the bids for the financial transmission rights. And FERC said, no, that's not economically efficient. It's distorting what's happening, what that financial transmission right was always intended for and to be good at, which was a hedge against day-ahead congestion. We define what we are trying to do. Our tariff says the goal.
You certainly have increased the values of the FTR by the RLU FERC has, but at the price of sticking the load service entities, and this is what my colleague was concerned about, for an extra charge for real-time balancing.
Well,
is that fair?
It is spread broadly to load.
Well,
exports.
I don't know why it's spread broadly. I have the same problem my colleague does. I don't understand why hitting all the LSEs with the charge for real-time balancing spreads it more broadly than it would be if it was a charge, a part of the cost for the FTRs in the broad market. I don't understand why hitting the LS. I can understand a different argument, which is the LSEs, after all, own the transmission system, and this is a cost we can't allocate to anybody. So under our normal law rules, we stick the customers with the cost. I can understand that point. I don't understand the more broadly.
I think I have a question that might help clarify this. If I keep an ARR,
yes,
then I get the congestion revenue from the day-ahead market that corresponds to that?
No.
No.
If you're a load-serving entity, we allocate you auction revenue rights based on your historic usage of the system and on your load.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and you get the auction revenue rights. Okay, you
get auction revenue. So when people bid on FTRs,
right,
I'm going to get a chunk of that.
You're going to get the steady stream of dollars,
right,
that people bid into the FTR market instead of the variation in congestion. Now they are anticipating congestion when they put in those offers, but they're taking the risk on the gradations in it.
I'm just going to say, so ARR holders and FTR holders, be the FTR holders, load serving entities, mm-hmm, or others, all those groups, all whatever the auction is encompassing, whether mm-hmm it's encompassing only congestion revenue or also balancing congestion, they all are allocated that in a equivalent way.
Indirectly for the auction revenue rights.
Right. Because the auction revenue is affected. Because the auction revenue is affected by what the nature of the revenue that's included in an FTR is.
It's affected by what they bid into the auction. And so they will use that, what FERC referred to as the imprecise risk premium, to try and factor in the unknowables into that offer.
Right.
And FERC found that was inappropriate, that it was distortive. Now, we've done this on day ahead for a long time.
We've done what on day ahead?
We have based the value of financial transmission rights on day ahead since we established financial transmission rights. And as I said, part of that is because we are used to having most of our settlements in the day ahead market, and those are the things people can't anticipate by definition. And so that is reflected in a number of tariff provisions that have been in our tariff for quite some time. The idea that the goal is to return through FTRs the congestion that is under expected conditions. That's the language we use in Section 7.5. And so that, again, is expected conditions. Now, no one proposed to change those rules. You can scour the FERC initial rehearing order for them responding to an argument like you heard here today of, oh, there's no such thing as underfunding. Oh, you shouldn't set your target allocation on day-ahead rights. And the target is set specifically on day-ahead. This idea of the target, which defines underfunding, is specifically in the tariff set on day-ahead. FERC never responded to an argument that said you shouldn't do that because no one made it.
All right, is there another question from the bench? Do you have a question?
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. All right, I know there's no time left. Mr. Mays, you're almost 30 minutes over. I'll give you 1 minute to respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. And the main thing I think I would like to respond to is the only remaining question, I think, that was in this case about, at least from the perspective of the questions that I received, and that is, you mentioned the gravy train and the FTR market, and I think it's worth pointing out, and you were talking about the decision to keep the FTR or whether to go to the FTR market and get the auction revenues. So one thing that should be understood is that the FTR markets have always, they've been consistently profitable. This means that more that the money that load gets out of the FTR market in the form of the auction revenues is less than the money that the FTR holders are getting. And so when you talk about underfunding under any understanding, you're not talking about a situation where the FTR holder paid less for the FTR and then doesn't get a larger payout from the market. They consistently get a larger payout of congestion revenue. The only question is they don't get as much payout as they would like because the balancing congestion revenue is included. And so from the perspective, and I don't want to get into the mind of
it's good because you're now over a minute. Are there any further questions? Thank you. Mr. Hall, you deserve a half a minute since you had half of the time available originally. So let's see what you can do in half a minute.
All right. In half a minute, Your Honor, only one thing to respond to, and that was the question regarding the under allocation of ARRs and the driver behind that, and that really gets to the legal issue with the ARR allocation question. PJM identified itself in its filing that the predominant problem driving down the ARR allocations in stage 1B was their own choice to model very conservatively certain transmission outages. And so our argument is that by not addressing that sort of root cause and acknowledging there was a problem and finding some alternative solution to it that didn't really address what was happening, that's where the commission committed error.
Okay. Are there any further questions? No. Thank you very much. We'll take the matter under submission. We'll take a brief break before the next case.